A Far Cry from Home. A Mother's Journey of Love, Loss, and Healing Through the Eyes of an Angel. Written by Sandy Richards. Narrated by Trevor O'Hare. Chapter 1. A Change is Coming. The last memory I have of Mom, while I was alive, is of her standing in the doorway of our tri-level home. As usual, Mom was dressed in her jeans and game day attire. It was Friday night football in Walled Lake. Tonight, however, felt different. Our high school football team was playing an away game in Flushing, and for the first time that I can remember, Mom would not be in the stands. Aunt Sonia, Vicky, and Jeanette were taking Mom up north for a relaxing weekend in Harbor Springs. Girl stuff, she told me. Still, I know my mom so well. There was no place that she would have rather been than at my football game. I could read it all over her face. Mom had not felt good the week before the girls' getaway and had almost canceled the trip. I didn't want my mom to be sick, but I wished like hell that she had stayed ill and never left home. That whole week, I had weird nightmares about something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Mom asked me about them because she heard me calling out nonsense words in my sleep and thrashing about, kicking the walls in my bedroom. It could have been foresight that something was about to drastically change our lives, but my mind was too sleep-muddled for clarity. I was so pumped for this game against Flushing. Our team hadn't done so well the first few games of the season. We were a new school, and our varsity team was young, with big goals. I wasn't the biggest, fastest, strongest player on the team, but I loved my teammates. Our coaches did everything they could to instill team spirit and good sportsmanship with our group of bound and determined boys. Most of us had known each other since we were in kindergarten. We went from being best friends in elementary school to being sparring partners in middle school, and back to being best friends in high school. We had come full circle. We were there for each other, no matter what. My football equipment was crammed into my white Sebring convertible. The speaker system filled the back seat and pumped out Detroit rap music well beyond a normal level. Our neighbor, Dave, Vicky's husband, would call me Road Weasel when I cruised down the street, music blaring on my way to school or football practice. He always laughed at me and my younger brother Austin when we drove by. Just for fun, we would wave and somehow manage to flip him the bird at the same time. He got a kick out of that. He said we were growing up. As I was getting ready to pull away from our house, I looked at Mom standing in the doorway. She seemed like she was listening to someone or something. It was the look on her face and the way she had her head cocked to the right that made me do a double take. Before I realized it, she was out of the doorway and running up to the passenger side of my car. I will never in a million years forget the words that she said to me that day. "Tyler, I'm so proud of you. You know I never miss a game and won't be there to watch you tonight. Just remember, I'm always with you in spirit, and I'm your biggest fan. I will love you forever, buddy," she told me with tears in her eyes. Jeez, she's so emotional, I thought. What's a guy to do? I looked over at her and gave her my infamous crooked smile. "I know, Mom." Looking back, I wish 1,000 times that I had told her how much I loved her. I pulled away from the curb full of hopes and dreams and left in my wake a woman who would lay down her life for me and my brother. She didn't deserve what the universe had in store for her, and neither did the rest of us. Mom already had her car packed for the weekend. We constantly teased her about having OCD, but I knew that she just liked order in her life. She lucked out with both of us. We tested her to her last nerve on everything. Off she went to pick up the girls and headed north on I-75. Normally, this is a beautiful drive, especially in mid-September, when the color of leaves hint at the cooler weather on the way. Near the Flushing area, a warning light came on in Mom's Honda Accord. She saw the engine warning light as a sign. Turn the hell around and go home. But as always, she couldn't disappoint her friends by changing plans. Vicky thumbed through the manual, trying to find the meaning of the warning icon. But she was looking in the wrong place for the meaning to what was going on. Mom looked into the rearview mirror and caught the worried look on Aunt Sonia's face. Approximately 5 miles past Flushing, and right around halftime of our game, the warning light went off. Poof. Just like that. Coincidence? A short in the wiring. A gut feeling. A sign, perhaps, of things to come. I felt it, and I know Mom felt it too. After halftime, I was standing by the fence, talking with my friend Cameron's mom, Mrs. Byram. She was the cheerleading coach. I wasn't getting any playtime, so we were just shooting the shit. All the guys liked talking to Mrs. Byram. We could tell her anything. She also missed seeing Mom in the stands. Their friendship had grown over the previous years, and they were quite a pair. Mrs. B told me how great my mom was and how hard she worked as the booster club president for our football team. One always knew where to find my mom, at the top of the stands on the 50-yard line, except when she was selling raffle tickets, getting the crowd fired up, or networking with the other parents. She was like a mini tornado, here, there, and everywhere. All she wanted was for us boys to enjoy our season and to make us feel like we were something special. She did just that. It's no coincidence, knowing what I know now, that a chilling wind started blowing right after halftime. At about the same time, the warning light on Mom's car went out. Mrs. B went back to the stands and covered up with her cheerleaders while I jumped up and down trying to stay warm. Finally, the game and the cold night came to an end, but the hair on the back of my neck didn't stop standing up on end until Saturday night. As I see it, the ladies made it safely to Harbor Springs and checked into their room at the Holiday Inn. Women can be so funny sometimes. They got into their cute little jammies, opened a bottle of wine, laid out the munchies, watched TV, and talked until late into the night. They all slept well, except for Mom. Saturday turned out to be a gorgeous day, and a special one for me. I started my first real job at Six Lakes Party Store, thanks to my friend Mike Morelli. Mike, a teammate and close friend, helped me get the job. I was excited to start making some cash. My boss had me straightening the shelves, sweeping the floor, and loading the coolers. At around 3:30 p.m., my cell phone rang. Strange, for a guy who never let his phone out of his sight. I had handed it to Mike to hold while I was in the cooler. The caller was Mom. Mike spoke to her for a minute, updated her about the previous night's game, and told her I was stacking bottles. He said he would have me call her back. As Mom always does, she told Mike to tell me that she loved me and that she would talk to me in a little bit. Of course, I forgot to call her back. Leaving work, I went to Dad's house, and he made me cut the grass before I could take off to the annual St. Pat's Fair. Pissing and moaning throughout it all, I got it done, cleaned up, and was ready to hit the road. Again, I forgot about calling Mom back. Cameron and my other buddy, Mark Ruggles, had been working on my speaker system while I was cutting the grass. They didn't think a backseat full of speakers was too cool, and they were scaling it down for me. My younger cousin, Travis, was giving them a hand. The plan was for me to drive Travis home to Howell, then meet up with Cam, Mark, and some of the other guys at the fair. Austin was going to go with me, but at the last minute, he decided to go golfing with his friends. "Meet you guys at St. Pat's in about an hour," I told Cam and Mark. Dad knew where I was going and told me to be careful, as usual. Before jumping into the car, I gave a little squeeze to my best buddy Maverick, the greatest dog in the world. Mavi and I were best friends and had been through thick and thin together. With a wave, a honk, and a definite increase in radio volume, I pulled away from the house. "See ya, Dad." Chapter 2. Busted Glass Didn't Stand a Chance. A black swan is a low-probability, high-impact event that hardly anyone would have anticipated. Nassim N. Taleb. In hindsight, I wish Mom would have paid closer attention to the first little black feather that floated just outside of her conscious mind. Mom and the girls visited Vicky's lot, where she and Dave were building a new house. A lot of oohing and aahing was going on as they all shared in Vicky's excitement. But Mom, not so much. She was sad that her friend would be moving so far away. Shaking off that feeling, they headed toward Petoskey for some power shopping. It was at this time when Mom made her call to me while I was working. She had this desperate need to talk to me, almost like she was having a panic attack. Being Mom, she didn't let on to Mike about the urgency of needing to talk to me when he answered my phone. The girls made their way back to the Holiday Inn to get ready for a fun night out. They were going to treat themselves to dinner at Harbor Springs' finest restaurant, The Pier. Back in Commerce Township, I was headed off for a night of girls, games, and more girls at the St. Pat's Fair. But first, I had to get Travis home. For being only 12 years old, Travis was a pretty cool kid. I think Travis looked up to me as his big cousin, even though I was only 16. Heck, I'd only been driving for 3 months, but he thought I was big man on campus, which couldn't be further from the truth. Shooting the breeze as cousins do, we headed down Bogey Lake Road. While I told Travis stories about the massive high school that I attended called Walled Lake Northern. The high school was brand new, but already felt like home to me. I don't believe Travis really cared about all that useless information, but he knew it was important to me, so he listened to my rambling. I do have a tendency to ramble. Okay, I talk a lot. Trav, there's the street that takes you to Aunt Gail and Uncle Mike's house, I said as we passed the entrance to Oakmont Subdivision, situated on the curvy part of Bogey Lake Road. Where the hell's the new CD I just burned? You're gonna love it, Trav. It has music from ICP on it. Maybe it slipped under your seat. Walking into the Pier restaurant, the ladies were treated like queens. The hostess seated them at a great table overlooking the harbor. Mom took the seat facing the inside of the restaurant so the other girls could look at the bay. She mumbled something about how the motion of the water made her woozy. Just as drinks were served, Mom's phone went off in her purse. By the time she got to it, the call had stopped. Caller ID showed that it came from Dave. Now that's strange, she thought. It's Saturday evening. He knew we were going to dinner, so why is he calling us? Mom looked up. Vicky had her phone in her hand and was walking toward the front of the restaurant, where it was quieter. Mom figured that it was Dave calling Vicky, since she didn't answer her phone. Looking back, I know that Mom suffered a fit of vertigo. The room was spinning out of control, her vision blurred around the edges. She'd felt a stirring deep in her core all day long that something wasn't right with the world. She felt as if the universe shifted, and she couldn't shake the feeling. Within moments, Vicky ran back into the restaurant and told the girls that I'd been in a bad car accident and that we needed to get back home. Commotion, tears, and absolute fear for the worst attacked them all. I thought Mom was going to throw up. She felt the tremors of terror and heartbreak welling up inside. I know she heard it, that faraway cry. Mama, Mama, come see me. I need you. That cry from home, our home that will never be the same again. I'm not sure what made me try to look for that stupid CD instead of asking Travis to find it, but kids will be kids. I tried hard to be a responsible driver, and shit, one little mistake upset the balance of life for so many. I wish I had a do-over. I would have kept my eyes on the road. I would have saved my family and so many others the grief of the aftermath of a massive car accident. I took my eyes off the road for what couldn't have been more than 3 seconds. My convertible crossed the yellow line on Bogey Lake Road, just past the big curve near Pinecrest. As I looked up, going 45 miles an hour, I was on a collision course with a blue Ranger pickup. The driver of the pickup was going about the same speed. At the rate of speed that we were going, Hitting the ranger head-on was like smashing into a brick wall. The ranger flew off the road to the right, and my Sebring spun around like a top. From the impact, the windshield pillar on the driver's side bent inward, and I had no place to go. The pillar basically ended my life. In milliseconds, I cried out to my mom, reverting to baby talk. "Mama, Mama, come see me. I need you." Making matters worse, my car caught on fire. Travis was able to crawl out of the wreck and pull himself to safety. Thankfully, he only had a broken ankle. I saw him frantically trying to find a phone to call someone to help us. People came from everywhere, and sirens were blaring. A resident near the crash site let Travis use her cell phone. He got in touch with his brother, Justin, who then called my dad. To this day, the impact of those two phone calls to my parents is mind-boggling. My dad arrived on the scene and was struggling to get to me. He felt that he could help me if they would just let him through. The look on his face was one of terror and helplessness. Bits and pieces of conversations floated through my unconscious mind. Massive bleeding. Severe head trauma to the left occipital area. Agonal breathing. The whoomp, whoomp, whoomp of the medevac helicopter cut the air. Shit, this must be bad, I thought. They're taking me in a helicopter. I hate helicopter rides. Threw up in one in Hawaii when we were on vacation. That was a great vacation. Heck, me and Austin met Wayne Newton at the hotel pool. They loaded me on a stretcher and kept pushing on my chest. Hey now, no need to be so rough. Bright lights were shining in my eyes, and the chatter just kept coming. Unresponsive pupils. Get that IV going, stat. No, the dad cannot ride in the helicopter to the hospital. We're losing him, guys. Hang in there, little buddy. We got you. For all intents and purposes, I left this world as I came into it. Naked, crying for my mama. Fists clenched, and then, peace. From my vantage point, I could see everything. I watched as the firefighters put out the flames of my wrecked car. I could see the paramedics wrapping Travis's ankle, preparing to take him to Huron Valley Hospital. Traffic was at a complete standstill on Bogey Lake Road. Oh shit, it's homecoming night for Lakeland High School, which is right around the corner from the accident, I thought. This mess is going to make a lot of people late for the dance. What's going on over there? I wondered. Oh no, please, no. I saw the mangled ranger. Is that a mom and a little baby? Oh God, please, don't let them be hurt. Please. I watched as the young mother was placed on a stretcher, her face racked with pain. She was asking for her baby. The paramedics were working with the baby on a separate stretcher. Oh God, please. I'm begging you. Help them. There were sirens, voices, more sirens, and whoomp, whoomp, whoomp. Some of the vehicles were going to Huron Valley Hospital, but they were airlifting me to Beaumont Hospital in Royal Oak. This is not good. Not good at all. Vicky drove back to the Holiday Inn. Along the way, amid the gorgeous scenery, she said a prayer that I'd be okay and asked God to guide them safely home. Mom sat expressionless, with silent tears streaming down her face. She was feeling everything that I was feeling, and then some. Mama, I'm so sorry to make you worry and scared. At the hotel, a packing frenzy began. Please hurry, please hurry, I have to get to my boy, Mom cried. Mom placed a call to Coach Frass, my football coach, and told him the news. She asked him to go to the hospital to be with our family until she got there. I watched Coach as the news sunk in. He stopped what he was doing with his family to go attend to part of his extended family. Big, heaving sobs were coming from Mom. I wanted to wrap my arms around her and tell her that it was going to be okay. But I knew it was never going to be okay. our world changed in that single, irresponsible instant that I looked away. I would give anything to rewind the past hour and make things right. Unfortunately, for my family and friends, God had other plans.